friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hello.
Chris Casso. And Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
With your pow earrings.
Pow, bam.
And you got your pow shirt.
And you
got.
And your Lichtensteinian fingernails.
I'm very themed.
You're like one of those bad news reports about how comics aren't for kids anymore.
Kapow!
Bam!
Oh, yeah? Bam! Kapow!
It ain't your daddy's comic strip.
Boy, it's a hot one this evening, isn't it?
It's, I think, very we're all
feeling
hot.
The heat. It's hot in here.
It's hot in here.
It's like 10 degrees colder.
It's cooling off outside. Again, this is one of those weeks where I just want to take the show outside on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take it on the road. All right.
To the
to the street. Taking it to the street. All right.
Dancing
hey, let's,
in the streets.
It's time for another segment of Welcome to the Comics Dungeon. What's selling this week and what should be selling this week? What is selling this week, guys?
Well, the Cry Havoc trade paperback from Image just came out, and that's getting a lot of hype online recently. I think you just sent me like a link to that too.
I did,
as well.
And I bought a copy,
yep.
And I'll probably be reviewing it at our next show,
mm-hmm.
which will be 4 episodes from now.
Yes. Don't confuse the people.
Sorry.
Last week, the Labyrinth...
Because it's got werewolves.
Yeah,
sorry.
The Labyrinth 30th Anniversary Special sold out really fast, so I'll be reviewing that this episode.
That's got name recognition.
Yes. All-Star Batman by Snyder's been selling pretty consistently. You were here yesterday with me. What else sold?
Rebirth stuff is always selling.
Still going strong.
Still,
where are we at with Civil War?
Number three sold really well because spoilers.
Because reasons.
That's where Bell passed. The Hulk's been murdered by Hawkeye.
Oh darn it! I haven't read it yet.
Oh.
Sorry.
All right, just pretend you didn't hear that.
You can't unhear that.
Sorry.
Oh, well.
Nobody really dies.
It's like Thor dying or Wolverine dying.
As we've learned, Cole, in comics, no one really dies.
Yeah. So the Civil War issues consistently sell out for us, and we have to restock those periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Human Body Theater is something that Chris has reviewed before, and it does sell out. We just got a restock in this week, but I don't expect it to last for very long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah, Gwenpool's still doing okay for us. Harley Quinn had a big sellout for us, and we just got our restocks finally. And slow down a little bit. So I think it's just that the heat of Suicide Squad, just that one week, did a thing.
How about the Batman Ninja Turtles?
The hardcover? I've done a couple so far, and that just came in, so that's nice and fresh. It's actually well-priced for what it is, so that helps it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything in here that you're trying to pawn off on people? Like, you need to buy this. It's great. It's not selling, but it's great.
I'll do that later in a different review for the new printings of Atomic Robo. I don't know. I have trouble making Kaiju Max sells still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like the saddest thing ever, and I refuse to read it because of that.
Yeah.
Even though I probably would really enjoy it, but I can't. Yeah. Maybe you should just be like, this is a great monster story.
Yeah.
It's very
cool.
But
Backstagers is something that is like Boy Lumberjanes. He I'll review this later.
Lumboy Jeans.
Ah.
It's a stretch. I'm sorry.
I like it though.
Not a bad stretch.
So I'll be reviewing this later, but this is something that isn't necessarily flying off the shelves,
right,
but I feel is totally in line with stuff that does fly off the shelves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And something else?
Black Hammer is worth mentioning.
Okay.
That's Jeff Lemire's new book from Dark Horse. It's very, very, very late. I believe the artist had some health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so number one's been doing solid. Number two just finally came in this week. And so that's worth checking out. Jeff Lemire always tells an interesting kind of messed up story.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Lemire's kind of everywhere right now.
He's a name that I hear a lot of these days.
He's become in the Colin Bunn and the Jody Belair.
Well, how's Descender selling?
That's one of our top sellers, hands down.
I like that book.
Yeah. I think it's like within our top 10 list of trades, it's like number 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the single issues have like the next biggest chunk of subscriptions right after Saga and maybe the Star Wars books.
Cool.
Something like that. So, yeah.
What do you have there, Nicole?
This is a line from Pop, the Funko Pops, and it's pets. It's just random pets. It's not a license. It's just cute puppies and kitties. And this is something that we all think should be selling, but isn't quite yet, probably because people haven't been exposed enough. But we'll shove it in their face, and then they'll buy all of them.
Then I'll just throw it at you.
Should we put it on the table like we did with the with
we'll
the Japanese
The next
Star
episode
Wars
will just be a
show?
Pyramid of animals in the center. Yeah.
All right.
Because, you know, by the Kickstarter for my Imperial Guard samurai figure has, you know, we're still it's still hurting, people. It's still hurting.
Yeah, I got to set that up one of these days. All right,
wait,
moving on.
Don't buy a coffee. Help fund Cole.
Help fund Cole's thing over there, whatever it is. Plastic
Takahashi.
Obsession.
Takahashi.
Toy. Okay, doll. Whatever you want to get. Hey guys, so Lumberjanes is going to be a movie. It's a it's and they've released who is going to direct it. A gal by the name of Emily Carmichael, and she's going to be directing it for 20th Century Fox. Now, I brought this up because Lumberjanes is a book that we like here very much.
Yeah.
And Emily Carmichael is one, like, before she was picked to direct Lumberjanes, and before, I think, before the gal who was picked to direct the Kung Fu Panda 3, 20th Century Fox had no female directors on tap throughout 2018. And so, hooray for Emily Carmichael taking over Lumberjanes and not some dude.
So she did Kung Fu Panda 3?
No, she didn't. Some other gal did, whose name I don't know. My phone is actually right there, so I can't look it up.
I read her credits, Carmine or whatever.
Carmichael,
Yeah, and I don't recognize anything that she's done. I'm
she's
glad
very
it's
very indie.
I'm glad it's a lady type because it's a hardcore lady type film. And the only person we had so far was the Munchkin guy who was writing this the run through of the script. And I'm like, okay, so that's good news. I hope.
Yeah.
I don't. You know, I never want to just be like, it's a female, so it's great. It's like
right.
Because we're human. You know, it's
she
not
may
necessarily
totally
about
suck.
Gender. She could be awful. But I think that, you know, it's probably a good direction to have a female directing.
So looking forward to that. Haven't seen any of the Kung Fu Panda films, so I don't know.
I saw the first one. Yeah. You know, it had moments of charm, but there are all those, you know, family-oriented CG film companies out there, and they just aren't Pixar. They just aren't Pixar. They
in
don't.
In terms of the storytelling quality or in terms of like the animation?
The whole kit and caboodle, brother Ben. The whole kit and caboodle. They just don't have the charm. They don't have the emotional intelligence to the storytelling. I mean, okay, let's talk about the first couple of the opening sequence of Up. I mean, that's still one of the greatest sequences in
so
filmmaking.
Good.
It's really good.
You know? And I just caught, I'm going to go off on a little bit of a rant. Hold on.
Do it. I forgot my water.
But I finally saw Toy Story 3. And, you know, it's like, you get sequel fatigue and you think, oh my gosh, that third story and it's going to be dreary and boring. And it was just as charming and just as smart and just as vivacious in its storytelling as the first one was. The Kung Fu Panda franchise is not.
Really? So I enjoyed the first one, but I kind of can't remember much of it. I never saw the second one, but I skipped and went straight to the third one. And the third one, other than just being really, really fun, actually had some fantastic emotional and different types of family stories. Mm-hmm. Like, he ends up with two dads after it, and that's, fantastic. It also had J.K. Simmons as the evil water buffalo, and that was one of the best villains I've seen in a long time, because he had been, like, in a magical limbo prison for, like, centuries, so when he showed up, nobody knew who he was anymore, and he was just getting really sad. He's like, I'm this guy. And finally, later on, someone is just like, oh, I remember you. And he's like, thanks, I'll kill you last. You know, so I will come to the defense. So the third one was really, really fun. Well done.
Sweet.
Had some good emotional stuff going.
Well, forward. I'm afraid I quit worshiping at the temple of Jack Black a while back. So, you know, just don't think he's that funny.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you can separate it and maybe because like he didn't necessarily write it. But it's just his voice, so I guess
And they had a pretty big voice crew, too, and it also had Master Chicken, which I love as a character who never even had a single line. Master Chicken's the best. So, yeah.
All right. Well,
and for reference, the director is Jennifer Yeh Nelson. Y-U-H.
Right.
I don't know if that's... I'm saying it right.
Yeah?
You? for Kung Fu Panda 3. Anyway, all right. Just to put it out there.
Cool. I haven't seen any of the Kung Fu Panda movies, I think I said. And I saw the preview for the third one. I think it was before Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And was, I'm all hip to see like Star Wars. And then Kung Fu Panda 3 shows up. And I'm like, what is this doing? I had an adverse reaction to the trailer for whatever reason at the time. Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's got Kung Fu water buffaloes in it.
It does. So
that's a selling point.
Look forward to seeing it.
For some.
Yeah, for
speaking
some
of for adverse reactions, Suicide Squad opened recently.
Oh, yeah.
And the funny thing, has anybody seen it?
Yep.
You have seen it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A huge opening weekend.
Right.
I think it's already fallen off to like two or three or whatever.
Yeah, it took a deep dive, I thought.
Was critically panned. Rotten Tomatoes, I don't know what Rotten Tomatoes, the review aggregator site, gave it.
28%.
20%. A number of fanboys started a petition to take down RottenTomatoes.com because they didn't like the review.
Rotten Tomatoes, it just pulls from all the different critics, so what are you going to do?
Well, and Rotten Tomatoes, I think, is owned by Time Warner, too, so it's like... it's
so if anybody.
Yeah, it's like they're not going to do that. It serves its purpose. It's a tool.
That's funny. So, is it any good? Do you guys like it?
Yeah?
It's okay. It's not... the worst thing I've seen.
Yeah, it has some strong points and it has some really weak points, which just gives it like a C.
Mostly the editing is kind of horrible.
Okay.
It's fine. It's one of those things though that I think a lot of people are really, really happy with it because it's not bad and I kind of want our standards to be a little higher.
Right.
But it had a lot of good moments. It had some fun. It had some good performances. But I'm sure the director's cut, if there will be one, will make much more sense. But the editing is just a perfect example of a corporate board of review being the director. it's just kind of too obvious what happened to that movie.
Is it very, very like slash and burn, so like cut.
Yeah, well, it's...
Yeah, there's just like a lot of character development for certain characters and then little to none for some people.
Yeah.
One person is just there to die.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
And so they never even get
a
characterization
flashback
at
or
all.
Anything.
They get nothing. They get
it's
no
the
setup.
One Native American character in the entire cast. And, let's kill him as hard as we can.
Yeah, use him as an example for the story plot, you know, to move the plot along. Like, no, really, we will kill you, you know. And the Joker's terrible.
But there's people that are making petitions for like his missing scenes, and he's even whining that he got scenes cut.
But now he's saying that he was forced to do.
Yeah, I think he said he was tricked into doing Suicide Squad.
Which,
was,
if you signed a
he was sold a bill of goods when he signed the contract.
Oh, whatever.
That's a terrible thing to do to an actor, and it's so unprecedented.
Are the comics worth reading?
Different runs. Yeah. There's been a lot of incarnations. The current ones I've not cared much about because they're the Harley Quinn-centric where she's not quite a Harley Quinn that I like. There's been some really odd runs that you even wonder why it has the name Suicide Squad attached to it. But some of the classic stuff, the Ostrander stuff, there's some really good stuff in there. And that's the stuff that starred Captain Boomerang and Amanda Waller.
Deadshot.
Yeah, Deadshot. Well, the Catman's... Catman?
Well, I like the new 52 Suicide Squad only because King Shark is in it.
Yeah.
Because he's a shark guy.
And then he bites people's heads off, right?
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Yeah. I'm done with that. I wish he was in the movie and not Croc, but Croc was okay. A bit hollow, but...
King Shark's over in the Flash TV series. You can only have one monster per franchise.
Okay. So let's move on. I will see it. I haven't seen it yet, but I will see it eventually. You want to go see it? Let's see it together.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll see it eventually. It's just really hard for me to get excited about DC movies. Yeah. I'm just not...
That's actually, we'll be talking about that in a future episode. But moving on, it was revealed that in the Aquaman standalone movie, if it ever gets made, the Aquaman standalone movie starring Jason Momoa as Aquaman, that Black Manta is going to be his villain. Mm-hmm. So here's an explain to Ben moment. Who is Black Manta?
Black Manta...
The Scourge of the Seven Seas.
Pretty much exactly that.
Okay, moving on.
He's a mercenary that always ends up fighting Aquaman, but they've added layers, and
But he is black.
He is black.
He's always been black.
Is he a pirate?
Correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
He's an underwater pirate.
But he actually murdered Aquaman's son.
Yeah.
And then they just added recently that the reason he hates Aquaman is that Aquaman accidentally killed Black Manta's father. So it's a cycle of complete, you know, family hatred going on there. But yeah, he's just basically... hates the King of the Seas and really wants to murder him.
Sadly, I used to get Ocean Master and Black Manta mixed up. And Ocean Master is Orm.
His brother.
Arthur Curry's half-brother.
Yeah.
Right. So I was never a big Aquaman fan, and I got easily confused. And so which son did Black Manta kill? Because Aquaman's had... There have been a couple of Aqua lads. We're getting into the weeds here.
Aqua boys.
Now, which son?
Cause... Yeah.
Well, because Aqualad was never actually related to him. He was just like a friend of the family.
And there's been several Aqua...
Kids. Aqua
kids.
And,
right.
And so different But this was his actual son through Mera, I believe.
Right. Okay.
And the thing is, the kid couldn't breathe... in air, so he was suffocated in a bubble or something like that. Mm. And that was some time ago.
Is that like a Silver Age story that goes into deep history?
I think
that's
like the '80s, but I can't remember now. The fun thing is the animated series completely decided like, no, we don't want to do that, and they had bearded Aquaman, and he still had two hands at that point, but he was tied up, and the sun was going to die over like a volcano vent, and he couldn't get out in time, so he took his giant A belt buckle and slashed his hand off and saved his son. So in the cartoons, they're just like, nope, we're not killing children.
Was that one of the animated films? I don't remember.
Just a Justice League cartoon series.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of kid deaths in Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah. So, trying to think of Black Manta, if there's anything else really worth focusing on. Geoff Johns has focused a bit on him here and there. They kind of really wanted to bump him up as one of the key Aquaman villains.
If I want to prepare myself to go see the Aquaman movie when it comes out in 3 years, and I want to brush up on Black Manta, where should I start?
He had some stuff in the Peter David run, but I would probably actually focus on some of the new 52 Aquaman that Johns did. He basically fights a bunch of Lovecraft monsters, so that's kind of fun at the start.
Cool. Yeah, those monsters were great.
Those monsters were pretty cool.
They were called like the Deep.
Deep in the dark of the bottom of the ocean.
there's just trying to remember where some good runs. It was Black Manta, and I actually can't think of too many.
Did you ever read like the old Jim Aparo ones from the Silver Age that are supposedly
only bits
very
pieces?
Yeah. But they've collected those in the black and white phone book editions, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which some of those are going out of print.
Yeah.
Phone book edition.
Well, you know, the big, that's what they kind of call them anymore.
Cheap reprints.
The cheap reprint. Yeah. Like Marvel has their black and white essential collections.
These are the showcases.
And exactly. And we started calling them phone books because the first publisher to take a risk on mass reprints like that was Dave Sim when he was reprinting the Cerebus books, and they were thick like phone books on inexpensive newsprint paper, and lo and behold, they actually sold pretty well. And so that's just become the model for reprinting those inexpensive editions.
The important question for the Aquaman stuff is his mother's name Martha?
Thank you. Because I was going to say, you know, they won't have a problem if their mothers are the same name.
I think the recruitment process for the Justice League is your mother's name Martha?
Yeah. Well, maybe they're going to rebrand Black Manta Black Martha.
And scene.
Oh. So, moving on.
Behold the power of Ben Lawrence! Behold!
You're welcome. You are welcome.
He's Marvel. Like one of those, like,
I gave you the wavy arms and everything. You weren't even looking.
No, I wasn't looking. That was very much by design. Marvel announced that there are artist shakeups for a number of their books. And what I thought was interesting is that Marvel said they were going to warn the retailers that there are artist shakeups in books. And those are Thunderbolts, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., All New Inhumans, Uncanny Inhumans, and I think a couple more. Why would an artist switchover be something Marvel needed to warn a retailer about?
There actually can be sales drops or increases depending on who the artist is. Oh, see, when you sent that link, I looked it up and I'm like, oh, these are all books that don't sell anyway.
Yep.
I don't care.
Yep, that's exactly
and actually,
right.
That's why they switched in the artist.
I just don't know why they would even bother making an announcement about it.
What we call those warnings, they're called solicitations. And
those red flags, we call those solicitations.
Yeah, they happen every month. I see them in my order form. But yeah, no, they're like Thunderbolts and
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All new Inhumans.
Yeah, I barely.
Uncanny. Inhumans titles that nobody cares about.
I barely sell anything on those. So yeah. It's just like,
all right.
But so, yeah, there can be, like, let's say it was a big title. Let's say it was. This happened for Batman years ago. During the Grant Morrison run of Batman, both Morrison and the artist took a break for like 2-3 issues. And the fill-in was like John Ostrander and some guy. And man, did we take a hit on those. Because you have a superstar name, and then you fill it with just kind of like person guy.
Right.
Ostrander is a respected name, but he doesn't sell to the same crowds. And then the artist, like, I literally cannot remember who drew those. So that just kind of goes to show you, not a big deal back then. So it is appreciated if there is a last minute change to get that kind of update that can change some big numbers here and there. Just not with those books.
All right. Cool. And finally, the new trailer for Rogue One came out with and we all knew it was going to happen. Dun, dun, dun. Darth Vader showed up at the very end, and everybody was all excited to see Darth Vader. Were we all excited to see Darth Vader?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
No.
Yeah. He's lost some of his luster for
me. He's
kind of, I just imagine him every time he's looking out the window just being like
sad.
Like
Vader.
Emo and like, I hate lava.
Why lava?
All right, and that's it for the news this week. If we miss anything that you want us to talk about, email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And let's move on to book report, everybody. And let's start with Nicole.
All right, as promised, I'm going to be reviewing The Backstagers.
Yay.
Thanks, everybody.
We did that.
Y'all are
pretty
synced
good.
Up tonight. This is written by James Tynion IV, who coincidentally also writes Detective Comics for DC. Artist illustrated by Ryan Tsai, SYGH. And colors and letters and covers and all kinds of things by amazing, wonderful humans, including Veronica Fish. She did the cover. She's a wonderful person.
We like her.
Yeah, we like her. Her art style is really fabulous. Okay, so it starts off with this new kid named Jory, and he is not so into being social. He's at an all-boys school, and he's talking to his mom, and he's like, boys are scary, and they fart a bunch. And his mom is like, Jory. And he's like, always farting, so much farting. Take me home, away from the farting. So he's trying to just convince his mother, like, I just need to, like, you know, be in a room by myself and do my thing. Got my sketchbook, whatever. I don't, you know, need anybody. And then she's just like, just try to find something. He's like, well, there's one club that I might be interested in. And it's the drama club. So it says drama club starts today. So he goes backstage. Meanwhile, there's these strange little creatures that have like things popping out of their heads. This one has pencils popping out. You're like, okay, so there's some strange creatures. And he shows up there. He doesn't really jive with the artsy people, but they send him on a mission to go down to talk to the stage crew people. Where he finds that there's just a lot of strangeness happening. There's these things called tool rats, which is what you saw before, and they all have different tools. They have like forks coming out of them, or nails, or some, or like wrenches, or something like that. And there's just this whole deep underground cavern filled with mystery and magic and stuff. And it's a ragtag team of people who love being the backstagers. Get it? Huh? Backstagers.
Gotcha.
Stay true. And he finds that he fits in with them really well and, you know, joins their crowd. So it's kind of Lumberjanes-y in that it's got strange mythical creatures. It's definitely got this friendship to the max vibe, even though they don't say friendship to the max. It's fun, and it definitely fits in with Boombox's other titles. I think that this is a great one. So if you like Lumberjanes, if you like what Boombox is doing and Kaboom, definitely pick up Backstagers.
Cool. Backstagers. Thanks, Nicole.
That's it.
I was trying to figure out, I was trying to see the issue, but it's Act One.
Act okay. One.
And it's about theater, which is great. Woo. All right. Chris Casso, what about you, sir?
Archaea, which is part of Boom, released Jim Henson's Labyrinth 30th Anniversary Special. It's 44 pages. It's $10. I'm going to talk about that later. It's a bunch of short stories with a range of creators, including Gustavo Duarte, who did the Bizarro series a year ago. Corey Godby, Adam Smith, Kyla Vanderklucht. I really like her. Ted Nephi, Jonathan Case, Jeff Stokely. And yeah, they're really cute, quick, short stories. Most of them about Ludo. Almost all of them about Ludo. Lots of Ludo. Some more Ludo. And then you get some goblins. You get the goblin who like ran a big old humongous thingy. And then back to Ludo. And then, and yeah.
It's the Ludo anniversary.
It's the Ludo show.
You do get a quick one about Sir Didymus. Didymus.
I always wonder, was his first name Epi?
What?
What?
Epi Didymus. Okay, keep going.
Okay. So yeah, it's really cute. It's really well put together. It's only 44 pages for $10.
Oh dear,
I have a problem with that. It's super high quality paper.
But it's, yeah,
it's shiny. It's you can probably slice cut somebody with it.
but the stories don't look that dense. It's not.
They're quick. They're fluff. It's nostalgia fluff. So you're paying $10 for the nostalgia factor.
Yeah.
There's no Goblin King. There's no what was the main girl's name?
Jennifer Connelly. I don't know which.
I forget
the
character. Sarah.
I remember her name.
Sarah.
Yeah. I think you might be close.
Poggle's the only other name I remember. From that.
Yeah. Hoggle's like very brief in here.
Apparently I don't remember it.
Yeah. There's the thing about Hoggle wanting to learn how to date.
But we remember Sir Didymus, darn it.
There's a thing about Hoggle wanting to learn how to date, and the little worm from the beginning tries to teach him and all that. So they're cute things. This is definitely, like, if you don't buy Money Comics, but you love Labyrinth, there you go. Mm-hmm. But, like, it was kind of selling on the Goblin King aspect, because the variant cover was by Dave McKean, and it was all about getting the Goblin King on there. And then there's a variant by Mike Alred that had, like, a super shiny globe and the baby and the Goblin King. So it's just like, and then you get it, and you're like, oh, there's a distinct lack of Bowie in here.
Yeah.
Bowie rating is about like a zero. So,
were there going to be more Labyrinth books from Archaea? I mean, I thought this is part of the whole package of the Jim Henson package that they were
stuff,
putting out.
I can't even remember when the next one is and what it is,
because they did the Dark Crystal sequel, right? And then they did the Tale of Sand, which I just absolutely adore.
Yeah, they're timing this one out with the anniversary, so that's understandable. Yeah. It's probably because they couldn't get the rights for the likeness of David Bowie,
probably not,
because they got the owl, so he's technically there.
Right. But I would assume if you had the Goblin King on the cover in a variant, that's like bait and switch, right?
Kind of, but they probably did have to pay for the usage of that one thing. And there is a nice... I've seen this image online for like the past, I don't know, 8 years. I think that's by Ted Nephi, who did Courtney Crumrin. You know, so you get him there, but that's all you get in the book. So it's still a very good book. I don't want to knock it. The creators are amazing. There's some really beautiful artwork happening in there. Please, thank you. It's just one of those, like, if you really love Labyrinth, there you go. Or if you've got some extra money or you get a discount, that makes the blow a little bit easier. Because 44 pages is kind of like,
He'd go through that in like 15 minutes.
Oh, that took maybe me not like 5
if
minutes.
That.
Yeah,
if that.
That took me like 5 minutes. Because Ludo's dialogue is a little sparse.
Ludo,
of course.
The rocks are the other part of the script. You know. So yeah, it's fun. Be wary.
All right. Labyrinth, cool. Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. Cole Hornaday, what do you want to tell us about this
week? Well, the book I'm reviewing this week was anything but a quick visit to comic book land. And I've been procrastinating about reading this since I got it. And I'm sad that it's got Mr. The World's Longest Cat hair all over it, too. And I'm sorry I didn't bring the dust cover. This is Puma Blues, which originated in 1985. It was a really wild and wonderful series originally written by Stephen Murphy and Michael Zulli, that is set in the distant future of 1997. And it was the only book outside of Cerebus the Aardvark that Dave Sim was publishing through Aardvark International. One of the reasons why the series was never truly finished were some distribution hang-ups that came when Dave Sim was trying to work out, renegotiate distribution for Cerebus the Aardvark and that sort of thing. But that's neither here nor there. The plot deals with a young man named Gavia Immer, and Gavia Immer is actually Latin for loon, which I learned from reading the book. When I originally read this series, I read it month to month, and I couldn't tell you what the heck was going on in it. I knew that there was this guy living in a cabin on a lake in Massachusetts, and he had this gun. And with this gun, he would shoot these mutant flying black mantas. He wasn't killing them. He was, like, zapping them to somewhere else in space and time. And the black mantas were flying around this lake in New Hampshire, or Massachusetts, rather, because there had been a nuclear bomb blast in the Bronx set off by terrorists a couple years before. So the whole book was very prescient and very surreal with regards to ecological disaster and terrorism and all these things. But I still found it fascinating. I just couldn't tell you what the heck was happening in it. And I eventually, you know, ran out of steam reading the book. So I was really excited when I learned that they are reprinting this. But what I did not realize is that they finished the story. There's an additional 40 pages of new artwork and story that's set 20 years in the future from 1997. So, 2007? No, I think it's
2017.
It's 2017. I think it's set further in the future than that. It's a really beautiful and amazing story, and now I get it, and now I get what it was trying to say. It's an echo horror story, and it's incredibly poetic and incredibly beautiful, and you just can't have a happy ending when you're dealing with echo horror and echo terrorism. What I can say about it is that, and I had to write this down because I was actually getting kind of emotional when I was reading it. It's tragic and it's beautiful. And I hope when we as a species finally do destroy ourselves, it is done with so much poetry. The book is huge. It's 580 pages long, and if you're familiar with the work of Michael Zulli, then this is a real treat for you, because you watch his skills evolve. And if you're not familiar with Michael Zulli, he drew a couple of story arcs for The Sandman, like the Midsummer Night's Dream story. He also did this beautiful Kickstarter book called The Fracture. Nicole, you always remember the name.
I always forget and then I have to look it up. But yeah, I have
The Fracture
of,
I wrote it down.
Of the Universal Boy?
The Fracture, yes. The Fracture of the Universal Boy, which is this beautifully...
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but...
No, but it's wonderful to look at.
But he also drew one of the best story arcs of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ever, because it's done in this hyper-realistic style as though it was produced by Akira Kurosawa. So imagine the Ninja Turtles stories looking like a Kurosawa film. So, yes, I do recommend this book. It is not cheap. I don't remember what it retailed for because I left the dust cover at home. Do you remember, Chris?
I don't.
It might not even be still available either.
Really?
It's already out of print?
I mean, you can find the individual issues, but you won't have the additional 40 pages, which is too bad. There was a reprint in the 90s of most of the series to that point called Watch That Man, which, again, is incomplete. But if you can get your hands on it, I recommend. I truly recommend.
All right, give us the name again.
Puma Blues.
Puma Blues.
By Murphy and Zulli.
Look at that giant book. That's not your standard comic anthology.
It's like a Riverside Shakespeare, man. It's huge.
Yeah, look at that.
And listen. That's a book.
And it's got cat hair all over it.
That's it. It's mystery hair all over it.
So leave it on your book. Don't throw it in the store.
Yeah, Chris has to vacuum that up later. All right, and if you're playing the
it's all
black...
me anyway, right?
If you're playing the Black Manta drinking game, then I apologize.
Whoa!
Yeah. All right. So, well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Nicole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review if you like, or go to PerfectBoundPodcast.com and subscribe via any RSS reader, however you get your podcast. And now, friends, put your quiz hats on. It's time for quiz time. And this week, the questions come to us from me. This is about Amalgam Comics. How many of you remember Amalgam Comics?
Whoa.
This might be just for you, then.
No. I read them all, too. All right.
So, 20 years ago, Amalgam Comics was a joint venture. Amalgam Comics was a joint venture between Marvel and DC. In the Amalgam Universe, characters from each publisher were merged to create a whole new character. I'm going to give you an Amalgam character, and you have to tell me what two different characters they are based on.
This is good, man.
This is courtesy of comicbookresources.com. Oh. They have one of those listicles things. Okay, number one, the Magnetic Man, Chris Kasso.
Magneto and the Metal Man.
Yes, sir. Number two, Amazon, Cole Hornaday.
Storm and Wonder Woman.
Yes, sir. Number three, Sparrow. Chris?
Jubilee and Robin.
Yeah. Number four,
nice.
Hyena. Chris?
This Joker, is a weird one. Joker and Cheetah. No.
Close. Joker is one of them.
Right.
All right, I'll give it to you.
Oh, wait. Well, no, it'll be the other.
Yeah, you got two universes. You gotta jump the other side of the river. Joker and
the Jackal.
Nope. Okay, I'm gonna give it to you. It's Sabretooth.
Oh.
And finally, number five, Dark Claw. Cole.
Wolverine and Batman.
Yes, sir.
That was my favorite. But,
I was always disappointed that they never merged Fin Fang Foom and Boom Boom from X-Force, because right. You get Fin Fang Boom Boom.
Right. Or Man-Thing and Swamp-Thing and get Thing-Thing.
Thing-Thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were a couple really obvious ones. There was like Doctor Strange Fate, which was Doctor Strange and Doctor
Fate. That was great.
The best thing that came out of that was the Hulk got merged with Solomon Grundy, so Dr. Banner would turn into Solomon Grundy. Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting list. If you've never heard of Amalgam Comics, check them out and look at the Amalgam.
The best of the Amalgam stories are right there on your paper.
Oh yeah, those five.
That's right. In essence, you got the best of it right there.
Hot dog! All right, points to me then. And with that, we're gonna leave. We will thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.